When someone in your family is going through depression, it's hard to know what to say, and I said everything wrong. I'm Sam. Our family went through it, and I just kept saying, come on, let's get it together. The thing I should have been saying is, let's get you to the center, a place of hope. It's a place for you or a place for someone you love who's struggling with depression, anxiety, trauma, eating disorders. So many success stories. It's personal to me. They've actually saved the lives of people I love. If you felt like, I don't know what to do to dig out of this really dark place, and you've tried everything and you can't think of what to do next, make a phone call right now. Call the Center, a Place of Hope.
Hey, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you or someone you love is in a tough spot, stuck, maybe in need of serious help, someone to talk to, you need somebody, I want you to write down this number for the Center, a Place of Hope. The number is 888-726-8125. That number again, 888-726-8125. I think if you write that number down, you're going to be glad you did. I have referred a number of people, a great number of people, to this ministry for special mental health care. They're outstanding. I can give them highest praise. That number again, 888-726-8125. Speak to our colleagues, the admissions team at the Center, a Place of Hope. Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be, especially Christ-centered help. Our friends at A Place for Hope, they're here to help. I hope you'll call today, and may God bless you.
Welcome to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. And on behalf of our hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help AACC equip the church and provide Christian mental health care to those in need, visit AACCFoundation.org to donate. Your gift will ensure that this program and your station remain on the air. Now, let's join our hosts, Dr. Tim and Zach Clinton.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back into the show today. I'm also joined by my dad, Dr. Tim Clinton, who will be co-hosting alongside of me today. I'm sitting down with a great friend of our ministry, Gabe Lyons. Gabe is the founder and president of Think, that's spelled T-H-I-N-Q, a groundbreaking media company dedicated to exploring the intersection of faith, culture, and the next generation. He's also the host of the Undercurrent podcast and co-host of Rhythms for Life with his wife, Rebecca. Together, they have four children and partner together in ministry to host events that inspire believers to live out their faith purposefully and authentically in today's culture. Gabe's written several influential books, but he and Rebecca are about to release their first co-written book titled The Fight for Us, Overcome What Divides to Build a Marriage That Thrives. And that's the focus of our conversation together today. I'm excited for you to hear it. Gabe, my friend, thank you so much for joining us today.
I love being here with you guys. Looking forward to it.
We cannot wait to unpack your book today, The Fight for Us, Overcoming What Divides to Build a Marriage That Thrives. But hey, before we begin, we're backstage here, Pensacola, Florida, Marcus Point Baptist Church. We have our Extraordinary Women Tour going on, literally just rooms away, 1,500 women packing the place out. There's an energy, there's an expectancy of all that God's going to do. And us boys, we're backstage.
We're in the back room.
Gabe, I'll say this, man. Hey, you're not used to this. You're with Think and what God is doing through the Think Media platform, your events, your conferences. I got to ask up front, what's it like in this season, like in this moment, traveling with your wife, supporting her as she is stepping in and walking in the calling God has placed on her life?
I love it, man. What a privilege to get to see God use my wife for me to support her. I mean, I've got a couple of our children back here where we're managing us being able to even do this conversation with your help. It's just our life. I mean, we just show up together in all kinds of different places. Sometimes I'm the one on stage and sometimes she is. And it's a joy. I mean, to see her flourish in her calling, which was really part of our journey, was over a decade ago, her discovering and having the space to do that. It's been beautiful to just watch how God's used her story, her willingness to speak very vulnerably and transparently about her own mental health journey and panic attacks and so many things that God walked her through and helped her get overcoming healing from. That's beautiful. So I love it.
Gabe, you don't have to go very far in Scripture to realize that we're made for a relationship, wired for a relationship with God
and with each other. Genesis 2 says that we are to, quote, leave both father and mother, cleave unto one another, and become one flesh. Gabe, nothing more beautiful in all the world than to be in a relationship with someone who's supposed to love you, and they actually love you. Nothing more painful or difficult than to be in a relationship with someone supposed to love you and you get lost, or maybe you don't feel love, feel disconnected.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about love and relationships today. Let's just offer a guilt-free job out there right now to everybody. All marriages will probably go through a pretty significant time of disaffection when you don't feel close, when you feel lost.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that problems are the issue in life. Everybody has problems. It's what you do in the midst of them that will determine the future health of your relationship together.
Yeah, that's right.
Ecclesiastes 9:9, let me throw that out there too. It says, live joyfully with the one you love all the days of your life. That's a calling in life. But that's a pretty tough assignment when it seems like, too, that everything competes against or for your affection, your love in marriages. You guys wrote this new book. You guys have scanned your own life. We're going to talk a lot about that. But what are you seeing? What are you hearing from couples out there? What are they going through?
Well, a lot of couples right now are overwhelmed. They're busy. They're overscheduled. They're not having a lot of time for one another. When division starts to creep in, it can go quickly from, you know, 5 miles an hour to 60 miles an hour. And people start to spin out in their relationships. And so we talk and counsel couples all the time who have gotten to this place where they're just dissatisfied. Some people have decided, I'm out of this marriage. But most people, there's this level of dissatisfaction that they're having with their current relationship. They know there could be more, but they're not experiencing it.
Right.
And many of them are struggling to know how to get there. They've tried some things. They've read some books. They've perhaps even had a counseling session, been to a retreat, but they're still struggling. There's still this fight. There's an angst that we don't feel united. And the enemy will use that to start to cultivate a story, make an accusation against your partner that they're the problem, that they're the reason that this isn't going so well.
Oh, it's, and easy, then, to, it's easy to go there.
Oh,
yeah.
And then get agreement, get you to agree with it.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, the fight's on.
Yeah,
and
like so, you're the sicko.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You need help.
Right.
Yeah. You need to go get help.
That's right.
Until you go get help and prove to me that you love me. I'm not doing this anymore.
That's right. That's a lot of marriages. And it's easy to do. It's the quickest way to scapegoat and to take responsibility off of yourself. So what Rebecca and I talk about in the Fight for Us book is you need to focus on yourself. This isn't about just your spouse and the things that you don't like about how they live. This is about you. I tell the story of, you know, growing up, you remember you had a girlfriend, you had to break up, and you would say to them to try to soften the blow a little bit, you'd go, oh, it's not you, it's me, you know? And then we get married and we flip and we go, oh, it's not me, it's you. And that becomes our full focus. And I think we want to help couples realize you're not going to get anywhere putting all the energy into what your spouse is doing wrong, but there's a lot of growth and healing each of us can do that contribute to a great flourishing relationship.
Gabe, in this journey, it's easy to begin to get lost. And I think most couples very subtly, very unintentionally begin to create distance. And that distance, when it grows, before long, it's like you wake up one morning and you're looking at this person next to you and you're thinking to yourself, I'm not sure I really know you all that well anymore. And even more, I'm not sure I really like you. I don't know if it's you, I don't like us,
yeah.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
There's something that's taking place, and the secret gets lodged deep down inside. And I think often behind a lot of closed doors in the quiet corners of a lot of hearts, there's profound sorrow, if you will, from love gone bad. I'm supposed to be in a relationship with someone who loves me, and I'm not sure I'm there, and I'm not sure that's coming back.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is. And Gabe, that begins to be a pretty dangerous place for couples to be, because that's where you start getting discouraged, maybe depressed, and there are rhythms that start, patterns that start developing that begin to cascade you, if you will, down a slope away from each other. Am I making sense to
you?
Yeah,
that's exactly what happens in most of our marriages, and we've all experienced it. I've experienced that with Rebecca. Those decision moments where you go, am I going to believe this about her and about our relationship and I'm going to run with that? Or am I going to counter that by going towards her, turning towards her, her turning towards me and saying, no, we're going to fight through this. And that's really been the journey of our marriage. Key moments where one of us was feeling a bit despondent in the relationship and the other realizing it and confessing and basically saying, look, I repent. I have been in a place of unforgiveness towards you. I'm going to confess. I've been holding on to this resentment, this time you hurt me, those words that you said, that look that you gave, the way the door slammed when you walked out the door that morning, that hurt.
Gabe, I remember early in our marriage, Julie was so mad at me one time, and we were spinning, okay?
Yeah.
And we had some friends coming over, and she had locked herself in the bedroom, said, I'm not coming out.
<That's>
And you know
best.
What? Dude, she opened the window and crawled out and left.
And you had to host your friends.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah. She's in there. She's going to be, I think maybe she's sick or something. Who knows? Dude.
Yes.
Those times, though, you go back, and those are pretty painful moments because you begin to think, you know what? We're really in a mess here. You used the word fight for a second. And in your new book, The Fight for Us, which I love. By the way, if you don't have a copy of The Fight for Us, Overcome What Divides to Build a Marriage That Thrives, you've got to get this book. Because, Gabe, take us down this fight piece. I learned early on, because I spent the first 10 years of my marriage trying to figure out what makes marriages succeed or fail.
Yeah.
And it's the old Gottman piece. And I got in there and learned that Gottman said, basically, it's not if you fight, it's how you fight that begins to drive where you're going to end up.
Yes, and that's right. And we reference Gottman in this book, of course, because he's laid out so many of those key ideas that are critical and foundational for couples to wrestle with how we fight. And what Rebecca and I define in this book are these four dysfunctional dances that we have found couples naturally orient themselves to, and they get very used to it. It's some of what we were describing earlier. You just get comfortable with the dysfunction.
Yep.
You learn how to operate with one another.
Isn't that something, how we develop those patterns?
Oh, yeah.
Seriously.
So one of them is the anxious pattern, where the couple doesn't even talk about things because it brings up such fear, so they just avoid it. Or the silent dance, where there's resentment that's built up for years, so we're just never going to go there.
Mm.
Or there's the intense dance, where the couple fights a lot and everything's intense and they're battling over how to flip an egg right, and that's Rebecca and I, like, our dysfunction is intensity. We move into this space where we start to argue about the dumbest little things, and we've gotten so much better about that, but when we look back on our marriage, that's been a big one. Then there's the avoidant one, where we literally just go, this is off limits, we're never going to go there. And so a lot of marriages live in those dysfunctions, and the only way through them is to pause long enough to reflect as a couple and say, hey, we want to break out of that dance. We want to have a healthy rhythm to our relationship, and how we're going to get there is starting with confession, recognizing, where have I contributed to the dysfunction? Owning it. Rebecca and I's new game we've played for a few years is who apologizes first wins. So when we get into any kind of tiff, it used to be that could go on 2 or 3 days of feeling disconnected, not really liking each other. Now it's like an hour. I mean, if it gets to that point, we're quick to apologize. And you have to humble yourself. That has not been easy for me. But it's been easy for her. It's been harder for me to just humble myself and take ownership of what I did. Because I can come up with the 5 things she said wrong or did wrong. But my overreaction, I need to apologize for. Like, it didn't deserve that. She didn't deserve that. And so starting to confess, talking, Rebecca and I describe this a lot, that if you're not talking, you're not healing. And in all those dysfunctional dances, what happens is we're not talking. We basically turn away versus turn towards. And so we have to develop rhythms in our life, our marriage, that we've worked hard on over these last, probably the last decade, to develop that keep us talking every day, 15 minutes a day, where we're having intentional conversation, going on a walk together, spending time processing through our day. I'm asking her questions about what she's feeling. And that wasn't easy for me, because feelings were not something I felt all the time. I had a counselor once, Tim, look me in the eye and say, Gabe, when I talk to you and ask you a question, I feel like I'm talking to an Excel spreadsheet.
Mm.
He's like, every answer is so perfectly poised.
That's right.
And I thought it was a compliment. I'm like, I love Excel spreadsheets. I'm great at Excel. And he's like, Excel is not going to help you in your relationships.
Wow.
And so I had to do that journey that a lot of us have to do from head to heart and start to understand even what I was feeling. I didn't even know how to process feelings. And so that's been a lot of the journey, is Rebecca was a little better at that. I've come along, and that's allowed us to now have real conversations where I've been able to say honest things to Rebecca I wouldn't have said, I would have dared not say a decade ago, for fear that it would send us into a bit of a dysfunctional dance. But now in health, I can say to her, hey, that hurt me when you said that. Or when you said that, I felt angry. And here's why.
You know, Gabe, in the midst of it, I learned through the years that you're in a dilemma as a counselor because you have this quandary of two rights.
Right.
She thinks she's right.
Right.
And he thinks he's right. Yeah. I remember going to a counselor. Julie and I went to see a therapist one time. Because in the midst of that session, that dude looked at me and said, you need to figure out how to love your wife. And I'm like, why don't you just shut up, dude?
Right.
I mean, pack it up. I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
Because I didn't feel like he heard me. Mm-hmm. Get what I'm saying here? Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough,
yeah.
That began a journey for us, which led me into a role of what we do.
And I was just going to add into that, you know, as we're talking about conflict styles and just fighting styles here for a second, I'm even reflecting back on my marriage with Evelyn. Evelyn would be more of the person that she wants to dive in and figure things out and fix things immediately. I'm one of the people that you said is like the avoidant type. I'm a peacemaker where I'm just like, you know, like a duck brushing water off me. You know, right, I mean, it's right. All good. We
keep
don't need to talk
forward.
About it. Keep moving forward. But that really brings then this sense of division as well, because
yeah.
It's like, hey, at the end of the day, we communicate so that way we can further connect with one another.
Yes.
That's where intimacy is built. That's where intimacy flourishes. But I think a lot of us have a misconstrued understanding culturally of what intimacy really is.
Yeah, you know, in our relationship, we talk about this. One of the chapters is about sex. It's called From Transaction to Embrace. And I began in our marriage with a very transactional view of sex. It's like, oh, I'm going to serve you. I'm going to do these things. And I expected, and then we're going to have sex, right? It was literally like making deals all day long. I'll unload the dishwasher. I'll do the laundry.
Yeah, you got the spreadsheet and, up,
yeah,
man.
The spreadsheet. This. Oh, here's the result. This is the formula.
This is going to be a great day.
Yeah. And so when you realize like that system doesn't work, that's not what God designed for intimacy. And again, for me, repenting of that and starting to go on this journey of healing to go, Rebecca, I want to do better at loving you the way you need to be loved, and inviting into our conversation, you know, one of our counselors has said intimacy, he describes it as into me, you see. So it's this idea of how do I see into Rebecca's heart? How am I aligning with the things that she's feeling burdened by and coming alongside and being that solid support that she can lean against versus the reactionary husband that's like, oh, you're feeling that way? Well, I'm going to, out of shame, take responsibility. Like, oh, it must be my fault. What am I doing wrong? I get defensive. That was a lot of my cycle. Versus going, no, how do I just stand here and be a strong support and listen, which I didn't do well, and learn and start to cherish my wife? I mean, I think of the scriptures in Peter, right? 1 Peter 3:7, that describes this idea of husbands loving your wife and cherishing your wives. Otherwise, your prayers may be hindered. And I got to a point in my life where there were a lot of prayers I felt like being hindered in my life. I was praying, I was asking God for this and not seeing it happen. And when I read that passage, I felt such conviction. Like, God's given us one person in our life as husbands to cherish. And in that scripture, it says she's the weaker vessel. Now, we know physically, yes, that'd be biologically true. But there's other areas where a husband needs to be that support that their wife needs emotionally, needs to bring the strength to the relationship. Sometimes it's going to be decision-making that, of course, you're both involved in, but she needs to rest in the fact that you're going to take ownership for decisions. But in all those ways, cherish my wife. And as I cherished Rebecca, what I saw in her was a whole new side come out where she felt safe again. She didn't feel insecure. Yeah. She felt secure in the relationship because she knew I had a longing to learn more about her. And so one of my favorite memories is just, this was a couple years ago, we tell the story, but you know, one day just getting to know Rebecca again. I mean, at 26 years into marriage, I should know everything. We went back to high school and I'm asking her all these questions about high school. She was a drum major in her high school band, right? And I was a quarterback at my school. So we didn't know each other, but we joke like we would have never dated if we were in the same school. Like I wasn't dating the drum major.
Right.
But this was your skill. This was your talent. You were a trumpet player. Like, just, I want to hear all about your musical journey, how that worked. I also want to hear about your first kiss. Like, tell me about that boy in ninth grade and what was that like? And just asking her these questions, very simple questions, just drew her out. And she's like, wow, I feel so connected to you, right? I appreciate that you care enough about my journey that we don't just get stagnant in our old marriage, you know, and think we know everything about each other, but we take a moment to be curious again. And that's the way intimacy starts to happen. And then sex is this natural byproduct, as you said, Zach, of a connected relationship. You're having fun. You know each other. This isn't transactional. This is about fun.
You know, Gabe, is we're kind of wrapping up here for a second. I just am thinking about the fight for us. I'm thinking about this fight for intimacy, connectivity within our marriages. And I love how Ortberg puts it in his book, I'd Like You More If You're More Like Me. He talks about intimacy, how he defines it, is mastering the art of the shared experience. Mm. And the one thing that he really references is that Christ is a beautiful example of what intimacy should look like in our personal lives and in our personal marriages. He said that Christ never placed efficiency over intimacy. He was perfectly willing to go about doing his work more slowly if it meant connecting with those that he loved more deeply. What you guys are getting at in this book is that the goal is not to fight nose to nose. It's to fight back to back.
Yeah.
To be able to fight for each other and for your marriage every single day. So as we wrap up, though, Gabe, I'm just thinking of an audience member out there who's maybe, they feel stuck in their marriage. Mm-hmm. They feel complacent. They feel like things aren't moving in the right direction. Gabe, what's a word of hope, encouragement, and motivation that you want to leave them with? And maybe what's one practical thing that mm-hmm. you want them to begin doing today that you think can help them, again, identify the challenges, but then move and build this thriving relationship for the road ahead?
Thank you, Zach. Well, I would encourage them to know that this fight is not something they're in alone, that God literally is there fighting with them, desiring to help them overcome these challenges. They made a covenant before God. He's made a covenant with them that this is something that he desires for not just them, for their children and for future generations. So getting perspective that the enemy is literally coming after your marriage, and this is one of his number one goals, to destroy children and generations, which is God's work in the world. This is critical for you to understand, like, he's with you. You are not alone, even if you feel alone today as you're listening to this. But then practically what I would do is I would stop. I'd pause long enough. If it's 5 minutes in your car before you go in, take a moment and reflect and observe and go, God, help me understand, how am I contributing to the fight, the dysfunctional fight in our marriage? Convict me of that. Help me to see it, because sometimes we get so caught up in our own perspective, we can't see it. So help me to see it. And then the second thing I would encourage you to do is, when you see your spouse next, give them a big hug. Tell them about your hopes and desires for your relationship. Confess if God's convicted you of something, like, I'm sorry the way I talked to you this morning. I'm sorry I didn't text you today all day to see how you were doing. I'm sorry for the last argument we had. Like, I was very dismissive. Like, take ownership for something you've done. Show that your heart is still open and tender. What we have to do is keep our hearts tender so that there's room for healing and there's an opportunity for our spouse to say, this is something that we can do and we're going to fight for, and then go out and continue the fight step by step.
Gabe, the fight for us, overcoming what divides to build a marriage that thrives. You said it's releasing April 22nd, or just a couple of weeks away. Where can our audience members go to find out and maybe even to connect with you and Rebecca, but also to pre-order that book?
Yep. It's everywhere books are sold. You can go to RebeccaLyons.com, R-E-B-E-K-A-H, RebeccaLyons.com, and see all about the book. We have a journal coming out later this summer called The Journal for Us, and that's 10 conversations every couple needs to have.
Love that.
Walks every couple through what many times we don't have the tools for, takes you through the prompts, the conversations, so that, again, we're healing because we're talking, and we want to help couples do that.
Wow. Gabe Lyons, a friend. Cannot thank you enough for what you're allowing the Lord to continue to do in through your life, Rebecca's life, your marriage, your family. Thank you for your time. Thanks for your willingness to join us today.
Thank you, Gabe.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help equip the church to provide Christian mental health care, visit aaccfoundation.org. Your donation ensures this program and your station stay on the air. On behalf of our co-hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, this is Jim Kress. We look forward to having you with us again next time. May God bless you.
If someone in your family has depression or anxiety, it's hard to know what to do. We went through that. I'm Sam. The center is a place of hope. Lives are being healed. God is changing families.
Coming to the center it's just life altering. My relationship with my husband, my relationship with my family.
Struggling to keep it all together, or no one knows, or you're hiding things, or you feel like you've hit some crisis.
It's amazing to think that there could be so much change.
Man, I'm so grateful for the center. It's so helpful for me, and I'm so hopeful.
The center, a place of hope. Call today. A lot of people are surprised that insurance can help cover this.
Dive in, give yourself all to it. Watch what happens.
Call the Center, a Place of Hope, right now.
Hey, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you or someone you love is in a tough spot, stuck, maybe in need of serious help, someone to talk to, you need somebody, I want you to write down this number for the Center, a Place of Hope. The number is 888-726-8125. That number again, 888-726-8125. I think if you write that number down, you're going to be glad you did. I have referred a number of people, a great number of people, to this ministry for special mental health care. They're outstanding. I can give them highest praise. That number again, 888-726-8125. Speak to our colleagues, the admissions team at the center. A Place of Hope. Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be, especially Christ-centered help. Our friends at A Place for Hope, they're here to help. I hope you'll call today, and may God bless you.